What are them over there on the right or left?
Well, we know it now says that we're recording, so
Oh.
I'm going to assume that we are. So
Okay.
I'll start again. December the 12th, 2008, and I'm speaking to Mr. Vern Duke.
Good morning.
Okay, now we're going to start. So if you could tell me your connection to the grain trade, who did you work for?
I worked for the Canadian Grain Commission.
Okay, and how many years did your career span? Like, how long did you work there?
35 and a half years.
That's a long career. And how did you get started working for the Grain Commission?
Well, actually, I worked for a federal grain company initially, and I wrote exams in order to get the job with the Canadian Grain Commission. At that time, it was called the Board of Grain Commissioners, and I was successful in the exams, but didn't get on the job immediately, because it was shortly after the war, and the veterans had the preference. But eventually I got onto the job, and I can't remember the year exactly, but it was in the middle 50s someplace, and I got on as a, what they call a grain inspection assistant in those days, a GIA.
What was, just going back a teeny bit, you said that you had worked for another grain company before?
Yeah, Federal Grain. Federal Grain.
And how long did you work for them?
Well, I was first of all the grain inspection end, and then I went to the seed plant, which handled the forage seeds, and I was there for about 3 years. Yeah.
And how did you get into that job?
Well, actually, I was directed to the Federal Grain to look for a job. And that was about it.
Was that your first job?
First.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I had many jobs before I went to, when I was going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at one time I had three jobs at once. But I don't suppose you could do that today, the way we did in those days, because there was manpower shortage with the war, you know. But, yeah, I worked for Federal Grain for about three and a half years. And I was doing similar work, in a way, with the Federal Grain. And then I went to the seed plant, and I became pretty familiar with everything required for processing forage seed, which is like alfalfa, clover, and those types of crops. Peas. Yeah.
So we'll go back to your time at the it was then called the Board of Grain Commissioners, and that the first job that you said you started with, which was an assistant.
Yeah, grain inspection assistant.
What did you do in that job then?
Well, actually, what we did was prepare samples for grading. We'd clean them, and according to the proper way to do that. And pass the clean portion of the sample with the residue of a sample, because they were larger than just 1 pound. And we pass that on to the grain inspector, and he'd do the grading.
So what kind of tools would you use doing that?
Oh, well, we had a little mill, a hand mill. We used to, I forget its name. A little hand mill that sieved out the larger material, and then we put them all over a sieve, which compared with, hopefully, with what they would use in terminal elevator cleaning to arrive at what they call the dockage in the grain, which is the readily removable material. And that's pretty well the procedure. Some grains, they allowed, they had tolerances for some things that would be normally removed, but that only applied to all grains except wheat. Wheat was always required to be a clean product.
Where were you located?
In the grain exchange building.
So So right downtown in Winnipeg.
Yeah. In the Grain Exchange building. On the corner of Lombard and Rory, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did the grain companies, I guess they were required to bring certain amount of samples to that?
No. What the procedure that we followed in Winnipeg at the time was that as grain cars moved from the country into the city, or through the city, they were stopped and they were sampled by our sampling staff that was in the rail yards. And they would use a probe in order to get sufficient sample in order to for us to assess its quality and cleanliness in the grain inspection office. And that went on 24 hours a day because grain cars moved all around the clock, of course. And all those cars, in most every car, went down to Thunder Bay. Yeah.
That's why I was wondering why they would sample it here when I know that there were people down in Thunder Bay doing it too. So how would they separate out what? Was it inspected twice or?
Well, yeah. One was, I think the purpose, and this goes back quite a ways, I think the purpose for us doing that was to give an idea to the terminals on the quality of the grain that was coming down. And they could segregate the cars according to the elevators. And there, of course, there was a variety of firms involved in the elevators, you know, Man Pool, Sass Pool, Berta Wheat Pool, National, Federal, Searle. Oh, there was quite a few. And they had their all had their own terminals, and they would receive cars as they come in from the west and that have gone through Winnipeg. And they would have the information on the Winnipeg rating, and that would help them in the initial binning of the grain, which was an important factor because it was a time factor, you know, to have some idea of what you've got so that you can readily get, dispose of it in the system. And so car lots came through Winnipeg and were divided out as they when they reached Thunder Bay to the different terminals.
Now, would you go down and
no.
probe the
no.
parts that would be?
No.
Someone, what would those
but
people
the,
be called?
At the terminal elevators, the cars were automatically dumped in most cases. There was a variety of ways. One was the automatic car dump, and the other one was the manual method of unloading the car. But they were unloaded. And as they were unloaded, they were sampled automatically in most cases, automatically, by an automatic sampling system. And that sample was collected and taken to the grain inspector at the elevator. And every elevator had grain inspectors of our staff. And they would process the sample, similarly to what we were doing in Winnipeg. And they would process them, but they would have a more of a final indication of quality for the good of the elevator. Yeah. Yeah.
We're doing an interview. So we'll just I'll carry on with one more question, another question. Who would you interact with? Because you were the government arm of inspection. What would your relationship be to all of these companies that you mentioned? Did you ever?
Well, most all the companies had grain inspection staff of their own at the elevator. And can backtrack if you like, because all the grain firms in Winnipeg had terminals at the elevator at Thunder Bay. So that they had inspection staff here, and they checked all our grading in Winnipeg. The inspectors for the grain firms checked all our grading in Winnipeg. And then when it went down to Thunder Bay and it was unloaded and sampled and graded, and the result of that grading was open for question by the grain inspection staff of the companies. And they would do what they call a re-inspection if necessary, And we also had a grain appeal tribunal, which was a final say. And it was just like the court of appeal, I guess you could say, with the law, that samples going there to a grain appeal were the final, absolute final.
And who would be on the grain appeal?
Well, they had several people. One was the chairman. He was appointed by the Grain Commission, or the Board of Grain Commissioners then, still is. And he had a group of grain inspectors from the grain firms on his membership list. And he would call two of them, neither one being involved with a grain sample being processed. And they would pass their judgment, unknowing what it is or where it's from or anything about it, just on the quality of the grain, and they made the final decision.
How often would there be a dispute between the inspectors from the Board of Grain Commissioners and the company inspectors?
Well, it's pretty hard to say because a lot depended on the crop quality. And it not only applied to wheat, it applied to all grains. And depending on the crop year, crop quality, and we generally carried at least 2 years' crop in the bins, starting from the country to the city and through to the terminal, so that you had two crops more or less moving in one, only one being brand new. And so the incidence of what we call reinspection, I don't know. I never, and I probably should know this, but I don't really have any recollection of any serious reinspection requirement within the inspection and grading system. No.
I guess in some ways, the whole intent of the Board of Grain Commissioners was sort of to be a hands-off kind of inspection. That
quality control, that's mm-hmm. what it was. Mm-hmm. You see, when the grain moved into the terminals, and don't forget the wheat board has a large influence on grain sales, so they would have to know the product that's there. And so they would be selling grain according to quality and quantity, and so that there was always a concern on what amounts were available within the industry, you know, at the time. Yeah, oh yeah. The network of drawing grain from the country, you know, it's complex, but it's not complex if you sort of understood what's required. For example, the grain would come from the farm to the country elevator, and we'll say it's a number two. And there are 30 farmers in that area, we'll just say that. Now, 30 farmers delivered their grain to the country elevator. And all the number two that the elevator manager thought was number two would be put together. None of it is segregated. It's all been together, bin according to grade. And terms of their licenses required them to bin in certain ways, you know, like one with one and two with two and three and three and so on. So this gives some idea. And then when it moves through the system, they're registered as it goes into the terminal elevator. Now we have a registered warehouse document which tells what the quality of the grain is. And now they know the volume because that has weight, etc., with it. And they have the volume of the quality of grain that's there, and they can assist them in the sales.
You know? So you're telling me the network, so can you keep it coming forward from...
Well, once it comes from the country, it's in boxcars. Mm-hmm. So that when it goes into from the farmer to the country elevator, it's binned together, all grain of the same grade. And then as it moves to the terminal, all grain of the same grade is similarly binned. But then you've got cars coming from this point, that point, that point, that point, across the whole of Western Canada. So they come into the elevator, and they're all bin together. So you get another combination of, of grain from area. And then when they ship it, they don't ship it by the carload, they ship it by the ton. And they ship huge volumes, you know, like 50,000 bushels was really nothing. You know, they get a boatload, you know, with 700,000-800,000 bushels. And it may all be one or two grades. You know, all this grain that's in all these bins from all these cars and all these farmer deliveries is all combined as it leaves the elevator by grade. And the grade is in the boat. And off it goes. There's another element, too, that comes in that once it leaves Thunder Bay, only in recent years, I'll say, did they bring forth the seagoing vessels. But at one time, it was all lake vessel. And all these lake vessels would carry their quantities and quality of grain, and would get down to an eastern elevator. And that's where they would meet the ocean-going vessels. So they'd offload into the eastern elevators. And all this, incidentally, was licensed by the Grain Commission. So they had to conform to a handling, etc. And that grain that was in those elevators, there may be from three boats or four boats, who knows, depending on its size and quantities. And that's all. It's not maintained identity reserved. It's bulked to two northern by itself, one with itself, three with itself, so on, so on. And they issue on the strength of ocean-going vessels what they call a Canadian certificate final, that carried to the destination. It's a guarantee to the buyer of the grain quality that they bought. And that was a brief explanation.
What would be the big terminals when the Lakers went with the lake boats?
Yeah.
Were there a number of cities down east that were terminals, or was there a main place that they went to?
No, there was a variety. You got to think in terms of ocean going because of depth, you know, through the seaway and that sort of thing. And but the main elevators, I guess, I have to watch because I lived in Baycomo for 2 years. I helped open the elevator there, you know, for licensing and that sort of thing. That's the largest grain elevator in Canada.
And who were you working for then?
Grain Commission. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the grain would come down in the Laker, and he would offload into places like Three Rivers, Quebec, Montreal, Baie-Comeau, Three Rivers, or Port-Cartier, and those large facilities which could accommodate ocean-going vessels without problem, you know. So that's the way it would go.
Just to clarify then, you said that you went to Baie-Comeau to help open a terminal there?
Oh, no, I was there for 2 years. Yeah, it was at that time the newest elevator in Canada in 64.
But who owned it then?
Cargill Grain.
Okay, but they would have you come from the Board of Grain Commissioners to help them get that
I don't know if you call that help. But I went down there representing the Grain Commission in terms of the quality control at that elevator. And in any new elevator, I presume that the initial movement of grain in and out and roundabout requires a certain amount of guidance and understanding, because that's an American elevator, it's not a Canadian elevator, Cargill Grain. Mm-hmm. And the people that came up to manage the elevator, you know, they had very little knowledge of Canadian grain. So we had quite a time for a while. Yeah, really did.
So in your career, which spanned, did you say 30?
35 years.
35 years. From the mid-50s to the mid-70s, I guess. When did you retire?
It was before the 50. I wish I could remember. God darn, that's terrible, eh? I left in 84. So if you subtract 84, you're getting down to 40-something.
49.
Yeah, probably 48, more like 48 and a half years or something.
Cause, okay.
Because I was with, I was over 35. But anyway, give you some idea.
So you would have seen a lot of changes.
I was very fortunate. There wasn't too many things that I didn't experience in the grain for the commission. They had a lot of things that promoted the understanding of grain inspection and service within the commission. And they had one thing they called the exhibit. We used to tour the country fairs and tell them what we did. Show them, demonstrate. We had a display vehicle, and it was very good. It went on for years, you know. I did it for 1 year, I think. Yeah, 58 I did it. And we also, we did service to the terminal in Churchill. And we still do that service there. We have to, because it's Canadian grain.
When you say service, what do you mean by that?
Grain inspection.
You do the inspection.
Now, all this is duplicated by weighing, incidentally. Mm-hmm. Like they weigh it in and out, and round about. And then I spent 2 years there, two seasons up there, you know. We used to go from, when did we go, July to November, I guess? Something like that. And then I got involved in certain projects. One was the determining of dryer damaged grain at country positions. If they overheat the grain in the drying process, they kill the germination. And that was detrimental some way to the milling and baking process of the wheat. There you go. Because you know, in the milling process, they degerm the kernels of wheat and utilize the germ because it's high in protein or in vitamins or something. I forget a lot of this. And then I was very deeply involved with the varietal identification of grain, because all grain, well, particularly wheat and barley, you had to be able to identify variety to a certain extent in order to grade it properly. And you'd have to recognize mixtures. And so you had to distinguish this variety from that variety in order to put it into that grade, you know, and that was very essential. For example, in the case of wheat, we had a infiltration of U.S. wheats into Canada, which were of lower quality, and we had to distinguish those from wheat that was grown in Canada, which was licensed because of its quality for growth in Canada, and we had to distinguish the two in order to correctly grade the grain. And some of those varieties from the U.S., they would go from, they may come in and they might have been the nicest looking wheat you ever saw in your life, but they would be at the feed level as far as Canadian quality was concerned because of their inherent belly qualities, you know.
How can you, because I don't know anything about inspection, how would you know when you looked at a handful, visually or touching?
Everything is visual. Everything is visual. Except for weight per bushel, moisture content, and purity. Grain was evaluated for grading by a system of visual inspection.
So on the job training, someone,
yeah,
that's how you say
yeah.
This?
Oh yeah, yeah. I went up the line, of course, otherwise you wouldn't be interviewing me. I went up the line and I was training officer for a few years. And one of the things we did is we had varietal examinations of staff. And they'd have to distinguish these, you know, these varieties in a test pattern for proficiency, grading proficiency. And it was surprising, you know, but the men were good.
Were there mainly men that were inspectors?
Well, in my day, yeah. Yeah, there. I don't... I don't remember, of course, it might have been at Thunder Bay, because I wasn't down there as much as that. But the majority, by far, through my career, was all men on the staff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very few ladies. But they came in and they got into good positions, some of them, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
So being on the Board of Grain Commissioners, you would, and you've talked a bit about this, there would be a real interconnectedness with all parts, as you're saying, this whole industry is a big network.
Yeah, it is, really.
So that you would have, as you said, on the, you'd have connections with the weighing staff. What about with the railroads? What, did you have contact with them?
Well, no, our yard crews, when they were grain sampling in the yards, they would have to have knowledge of trains in and out and things like that sort of thing, and particularly in and out, get out the road, you know, they run over you. But that's the only thing. There were a lot of side things that came into effect, you know, like, for example, contaminated grain that was shipped and discovered, and we'd have to direct disposal and all this sort of thing. A lot of minor in the total picture, you know, but meaningful. And as far as the railroads were concerned, they came to us if they ever had question about something on grain movement. But the wheat board was far more involved with railroad, because they allocated cars, mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing, that we weren't involved with that.
Why do you think there was obviously a shift in that Thunder Bay used to receive most of the grain,
yep.
that was going out of this country, and it has changed? Why do you think that, happened there?
That's market, the eastern, we'll call it, Oriental, etc. That became the larger market than Europe and so on. We used to do a fair amount of grain sales into Russia, but I don't know. I have no idea what they do today. No. I know the people that did it, but
mm-hmm.
you know, they're all retired like I am. But I don't know what the volumes are now. Yeah. But that's the main reason, is because the major grain sales are through the East Coast, and a lot of the grain sale, good portion of the grain sales now, is canola. And canola seems to be traveling more east than it is west by far. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've touched a bit upon, obviously, having the Board of Grain Commissioners and the whole inspection part, is that Canada had a reputation for delivering good quality, that if you bought from Canada, that's why internationally were pretty successful.
Yeah, that's very true. We had the highest quality standards, and we had the quality guarantee. And the way that the grain was offered for sale came under that guarantee, and it was good assurance to the buyer, you know. And certainly there were complaints that came forward, you know that, but they were always investigated and handled with due diligence. Is that the right word?
I think so.
And we had very few that ever amounted to anything. That they were pretty well within the guarantee. Yeah. A lot were political. In my experience, yeah. Over to Europe, and it was kind of in some cases, it was just that as long as we went and they could tell whoever they were involved with that they did there as much as they could, you know, with government officials. that pacified the buyers or whatever, whatever, I don't know. But that's long ago.
There would have been years, I guess, when the industry very much depends on weather, where you would years where you had a lot of product and years, I guess there were some slim years.
Well, actually the volumes are one thing, the quality was the other, and that was our major concern. We had years where grading itself was a difficult thing for a lot of the industry. Fortunately, because of our system of grain standards and that sort of thing, it assisted very much in segregating the qualities. But the experience for handling the cause of the quality, for example, frost and green and immaturity and that sort of thing, that experience was really important to the Canadian Grain Commission inspection, because we were the people that called the shot and set the standards. That was one of my jobs. That's a long time ago, my God.
If you had to pick the major, let's do changes first. The major changes, if you look over your whole career in the grain industry, what was the biggest change?
Oh, gee, that's a good one. The biggest change.
The biggest changes that you saw from where you worked.
Well, there was different kind of changes. The first major change that I was aware of was when they discontinued the sampling of grain in Winnipeg yards. We used to call them yards, you know, CNCP. And that took the crews that operated in the yards elsewhere, and another system for obtaining grain samples of grain shipments prior to Lakehead arrival. And that was quite a change at the time, you know. And then eventually they eliminated the sampling. What they did is they sampled the grain in the country. The country elevator operator, he sampled the grain in the country as he loaded the car and put it in a bag and put it inside the door of the car. And then our staff would go and take it out and bring it up to us in the Winnipeg Grain Exchange. Well, that was eliminated also. So we did away with all grain sampling as it passed through Winnipeg. And
what did you do at that point then?
What did I do?
At that point when these things were shifting in your career, you would then train people to do the inspections, or what? How did that change your job?
Well, really my job wasn't that high then.
Okay.
For a change. No, I just went along with what happened. We emphasized more on the terminal operation, really. I'm trying to remember. We did the country samples, and then, geez, I don't know what we did. I'll give that some thought. Well, we sent people out west to Vancouver, Victoria, Prince Rupert, and I presume we fed some into the interior terminal elevators, which was Lethbridge, Edmonton, Moose Jaw, and Saskatoon. There was government elevators there. We staffed those. That's for the inward grading. I don't know that, I can't remember what happened in Winnipeg, but one of the main things that was always taking place in Winnipeg was that if a farmer came to the elevator with his load and the agent said, "I'll give you number 3," and the farmer says, "No, no, that's number 2." And he says, "No, I want number 3. No, it's number 2. So there was a process for obtaining a sample of the shipment of the truckload, we'll call it, and the way it was held, and the sample was sent into Winnipeg to us, to the chief grain inspector. That's the way it was always had, the chief grain inspector. And we were quite busy in grading those samples for the good of the country people. And some years we'd get a huge volume because the crop grading was difficult, but in other years it would be appreciably less simply because it wasn't that serious or damaged crop. So that's one thing that we did a fair volume with. And there was another thing that entered into it over the years. When they brought in canola, which we call rapeseed, and in order to properly grade it, evaluate it, we had to be able to distinguish wild mustard seed from rapeseed. And you do that under a microscope. And so we had to test all our people and make them not expertise, but sufficiently expertise to distinguish one from the other for proper grading. And they did that. And then the canola crop presented a new consideration in grading. You see, the seed itself is a little round black thing, but you can't see inside it. So in order to properly grade it, because the grading requirements were quite low initially. I think it was 1.5% of green, or maybe it was 3% of green in the first grade and 10% in the second and something in the third. But anyway, we had to crush it. But we had to crush it in such a way that we made a seed stick. And this seed stick had 100 little indents in it. So you stuck it into the sample and pulled it out and covered it with a piece of masking tape, take the tape off, and then had a roller and you crushed it and you looked at it and you said, that's green. And believe me, you had to be able to determine green from green. green, or it's heated. You see, you can't distinguish heated without crushing. It's because this black seed coat. So we'd be able to determine the extent of damage in the proper grade of the seed, plus the fact that there's not too much mustard in there and that sort of thing. So that became a bit of a challenge to all the grain inspectors, but they became very capable of handling that crop. But initially, you know, it was something that we all were learning. All were learning. At one time, I used to grade all the rapeseed. But it became such a volume that it is today, and especially going to the west coast, I should say. And that was something then. Yeah.
Do you think they still use the same technology today to grade things? Do you think it's still basically visual? And
well, there's been one element that's really made a difference in terms of quality, and that is that in wheat they've included the protein content. So now they segregate wheat by grade and by protein content. And they're guaranteed, incidentally. They're guaranteed grade, guaranteed protein content. So we had quite a system set up on the protein. As a matter of fact, even the wheat board ordered grain from the country according to the projected wheat protein content of the area. Yeah, it was a very complete picture. And so if they wanted high protein, they would take from this area. Low protein, take from this area.
How would you know the protein content of a seed?
Of a seed? Mm-hmm. Oh, they tested it in our lab. And then they brought in very sophisticated equipment where they could do it electrically. You know, they had a very, initially it was by lab test. You'd have to boil a I think. I don't know. I didn't do it. They had to boil the wheat in a quantity of oil or something, and then do an extraction, and it would tell you the protein content, you know. And then eventually they got this machine in that could do a large volume of samples electrically, you know. But it was very, very scientific, because everything had to be weighed out in exact amount and exact proportion into this disc, and it's set into this machine. I never was really deeply involved with the protein element, even though I sometimes sat on committee. No, that was towards the end of my career. And even though I was involved, I didn't know very much about it. I mean, I couldn't segregate, you know, even though I was on the segregating group. I never, you know, that's what directors do. They have jobs that involve things that they're not too brilliant on.
Well, beside the changes, if you look back, what were the biggest challenges on your job?
The biggest challenges? Well, outside of the basic grading, I think possibly the biggest challenges was in training the people, you know, because you had to take somebody without any experience, and over time giving them a program and an opportunity to learn, and you know, to bring them up to the level you desire to have a very efficient system. I think probably that might have been it, although a lot of people never realized that, you know. But I think that was it, because we had a system of visual and grading, visual inspection. And it was all, the whole of the grading system, whether it's wheat, barley, oats, rye, flax, whatever, all visual. For example, take a crop like flax. If you had a crop of flax, you get a sample and you look at it, and they're gorgeous looking things. They're nice little chocolate brown seeds, you know, and everything like that. Do you know which one is heated? Well, you see, you have to have that kind of detection. You go in and eat it, and you can taste it. But, you know, those are the kind of things that it's the skill of the inspector and what he can see. One of the jobs I had was as chief inspector was to make the standards for Canadian grain, both Eastern and Western. And that means that you set the level to guide the industry. And there was a committee came to, and they didn't know very much about it. But setting standards was a very much of a challenge, you know. It really was. And we do it all in the fall, and had to have it done by a certain date in order to distribute to all the trade and commerce people around the world, you know. So, yeah, we had quite a, that was quite a challenge all the time. Yeah.
So as you went from your entry job level in the grain industry and you worked your way up, did you also have to take courses? Did the government provide no training?
No, it's all pretty well your own abilities and your competitive nature to compete for the next higher level, you know.
And you would have to write an exam to move up each level also?
Well, they didn't really have exams per se. Well, they had interviews more than anything, because they knew your history. For example, if I was a GIA, mm-hmm. that's a grain inspection assistant, I would compete for a level one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would know your history, but they would orally examine you in the way that if you were given a written paper to answer, you'd give the same answers. So And it was by the higher echelon, you know, like the chief and his assistants and so on. And then once you went to grade one, and you show your proficiency in grading grain, etc., at that level, because that was really a beginning of inspection, of evaluation, then you go to level two. Now you're getting, cause now you can grade wheat. You couldn't grade wheat as a one in those days. Only oats and barley and flax and things. Then you grade wheat. Wow, here we go. So then you got, and then you went to a grade three, you became a supervisor. And then the system changed after a while. I ended up a seven, and then I went up higher. But the seven was maximum that I know of. I think they had a grade eight in the egg industry somewhere. But I was seven, of course, everywhere I went, I had to relate to the top people, and some of them were seven, so they had a that. And there was never a written exam. Never, just to get on the job. It was always evaluated, because you got in the public service, you got evaluated every year. You know, on a, what do they call it? They call that a rating or something? Mm. Terrible thing. I hated doing that, you know.
Well, I can remember my father being on the weighing side.
Yeah.
That one of my memories, of course, was he went out to the Banff School of Fine Arts
yeah.
to take some kind of
yeah.
course that was related to work.
Yeah, I went to the Banff, yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of courses would they give you out there?
I'll be damned if I can remember. All I can remember is getting home, ride home in the big van by a guy that had a chicken farm, and he was expounding on the value of eggs for breakfast. And I think if anybody disagreed with him, he would have kicked it out of his van. We had to go from Banff back to Calgary to catch the plane. And God, that was funny, though. You know, we all sat there. Chief Commissioner and all were sitting there like this, you know. Yeah, right, you know. Five eggs for breakfast, right. You know. God, that was so funny. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But one of the things that I sort of concentrate a little bit on this because it was my forte, you might say, for a long while, was varietal identification. And I used to belong to a committee, Canada Committee on Grain Quality was called. And that was where they licensed or approved for licensing or discarded all varieties of grain for production in Canada. And I saw all the wheat and barley, Red Spring and Durham, winter and everything, and all the barley varieties at their beginning. You know, oh my Lord, I saw thousands. And I was doing it. My boss was really, at that time, he was, he wasn't even an assistant chief. I don't know what his status was. He was pretty close to him. Anyways, he was the expert. But I became, I think, that because he didn't retire, you know. And I did most of the work. He was more of a, yeah. Anyway,
who else would be on that committee with you? Like, what would a
which committee was that?
The one that was your forte that you were so interested.
Oh, the green quality.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, scientists, plant scientists, plant breeders. Well, they were scientists too, I guess. Mm-hmm. People in laboratories that evaluated green quality, like our own lab was the leading lab. You know, and people of industry, brewers and maltsters and millers and people like that, and us, yeah, chief inspector and his, yeah.
So before any grain came on stream in Canada
for production,
it went
for
through
licensing,
this.
Yeah. At the same time, we evaluated, at least I did, I evaluated all Canadian wheat and barley, having in mind what American varieties were like, the ones that would infiltrate into Canada, so that I was able to discard anything that they're entering into early production or development that resembled an American variety. Out you go. You just can't have it.
How would an American variety make its way into the Canadian?
Oh, God. There's a border there that really isn't very well policed, you know. Mm-hmm. And farmers try, you know, new things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they get mainly introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's going on today, I do not know. No.
Mm-hmm.
I've been retired too long. I think I retired in 84, I think,
mm-hmm.
in March of 84.
Well, let me see what else is on this little list of questions to ask you. I guess they're really general questions. If you're just looking back again, it's always looking backwards when these interviews.
Absolutely.
Your most vivid memories about your work life, like people or experiences or stories, like what comes to mind when I talk about something, highlights going back through your career?
Well, I guess one of them was the pleasure I had with some of the people that were, I guess I'd say my bosses. They were awful good to me, give me opportunity. One in particular, but two really were the ones. There was a third one that I admired very much, but I thought he was a bit of a crazy guy. But, you know, no, it's just the people I work for that give me opportunity.
And who were those ones that you feel comfortable talking
about? They were all chief inspectors.
And just for the history books, because I don't know who they are, can you
yeah.
tell me?
Well, no, there was Jim Conacher, mm-hmm. and Charlie Hammond, and Matt Ainsley. And Charlie Owen was my mentor for a long time in the variety end. He gave me credit on the one and only book we ever published. I oversaw its publication.
And what's the title of
or
that
printing.
Book? Or what's the title?
Well, I forget it. It was something to do with all grain varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of grain or wheat and barley. Yeah.
Do you have the book?
No, I don't. I can't even find a copy. Do you know, that was a crime. That really was. Attitude of people was when the yard disappeared. The yard people disappeared. All the books disappeared because they had them stored there, and they. I guess I have no idea, but once they went, they all disappeared. And I don't know anybody who's got one today. Of course, I don't know anybody anyway. But
so that was nice for you to get an acknowledgement in the book.
Oh, it was, yeah.
Because of your career.
Yeah, Charlie, yeah. He was quite a guy.
Are there any questions that I should have asked you that I didn't think about?
Well, it's hard because... you know, it's such a long period of time and such a broad place of a thing to discuss. The, I don't know, I can think of anything. I don't think so hard as I'm thinking. The first chief inspector, I keep saying chief inspector, I guess because I became one. That was my ambition, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I even wrote that out when I started.
And you did it.
Yeah. I wrote a poem. Anyway,
When you were younger or older?
no, right near the start, yeah. But anyway, we had a chief inspector. His name was Ludlam. That goes back a long, long way. That goes back when I started. And then he was a kind of a, well, he's a big man, and he was kind of a, well, I really didn't know him. I was young. I was very young. And then after him, we had Mr. Dollery. And Dollery was a real strict man, you know, strict man. But he wasn't always strict. He showed a lot of softness too. But he set the pattern for people like Jim Conacher, who was succeeded Dollery. And it was quite a change when Jim came in, because when Mr. Dollery was there, he was there so damn long. And he regulated us in Winnipeg pretty firmly, you know, like not severely, but just firm enough that we had a lot of respect. But matter of fact, when he walked in a room, we'd almost come to attention, things like this, you know. But he was still, because he came up the ranks too, you know. And then we got Jim Conacher, and he became a very efficient and effective chief. Oh man, he set things in motion that were stagnant for years and years and years and years. All that change in the grain sampling and all that, all were Jim's, you know. Oh yeah.
So what would be one of the changes, just as a.
Well, like when you removed the sampling of grain in Winnipeg.
Right.
Yeah, that was really something then. All those things. But you know, it didn't impact on me very much because I was just there. And we had in Eastern Canada, we had a requirement for grain grading, and so we can't eliminate it altogether because, you know, in my job I was responsible for the Eastern Canada situation, grain inspection wise. And we had inspection offices in Chatham, very big one, and in Toronto, Montreal, and of course Baie-Comeau, and they were for boats, but for the eastern grains, it was in Montreal, Toronto, where did I say, Chatham? Yeah, that was about it. And it was a big, and it was much of a concern, but it was mainly the eastern crops like corn and soybeans, and what else did we do? Corn and soybeans and wheat, and we had responsibility there. As a matter of fact, we had a heck of a big ordeal with the eastern white winter, red winter wheat, because they had an awful lot of moisture in the crop at harvest, and it created a mold on the wheat. And this mold became detrimental to using it for baby food and things like that. So we canceled all deliveries, just like that. Our chief commissioner went in, bang, and I started that. Went to the university and got an appreciation, and woo, it really did thing. And when it was a huge multi-million dollar suit that went forward, well, they lost, so we won. Well, I knew we'd win all the time, but I didn't know either. I wasn't that smart. But anyways, so we had a lot of responsibility for the eastern situation too, and a tremendous amount of respect, you know, for our Chatham office. They were the principal people involved with the eastern crop. And I guess they were the guidance for the eastern crop production and grading, you know. A lot of people had a greater respect for them, and they were good men.
How many grain inspectors would there have been in Canada in your career?
Geez, I don't know. can't remember. Let's see, we must have had. Oh, I guess there was about vehicle. There's Rupert, Vancouver, the interior elevators, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay, the St. Lawrence, and Chatham in particular. Oh my God. I don't know how many.
Sort of a rough estimate of.
I guess maybe about 150, maybe 200, I don't know.
So that's a big workforce.
It is, yeah. You know, because when you see inspectors, you see like we're throwing in GIAs there too. Mm-hmm. And that really whoops the number up. But yeah, I would say in the area of 200 or something. Yeah. But you can find that out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably find out how wrong I am. Yeah.
Do you still have the poem you wrote about going in the grain industry?
No.
Do you remember it?
Oh, just a little bit. I said, when I grew up, I remember this part. When I grew up, I wanted to be a grain inspector, grade 3. If I can take one step more, I'd like to be a grade 4. And if I could go one step higher, I'd like to be a grade 5 or something. And then I don't know, and then I ended up saying then become chief grain inspector.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I can't remember it. I'll probably remember it at 3 in the morning or something.
Well, if you remember it, you can write it down and send it to me. It would be a good part of the history.
I used to draw pictures of, when I worked at Federal Grain, I drew pictures of the staff that worked in our office.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 3 inspectors. One was a barley peddler, and 2 stenographers, I guess so, and me. So I drew pictures of a lot because we had a lot of idle time in the grain. The grain trade at one time ran from harvest to winter, and then went bruh. It did. The lake froze up, everything, and all the elevators filled and everything. And then you waited till the spring, and things would start to move, you know. But, no,
So you're an artistic person.
Well, no, I wasn't. I hadn't.
Well, if you were drawing and
that's
you wrote poems, that's pretty artistic.
That's a long time ago, my Lord.
Do you have one of the things that, of course, we're doing the oral histories of people. We're also asking people if they have any memorabilia from the time they worked that we could take pictures of or anything that's...
I really don't think so. I have no certificates or anything like that. I don't have any...
Do you have pictures of...
Anything I got when I retired. My boat's been sold, my motor's been sold,
mm-hmm.
Everything is sold, and I don't have any of that stuff now.
Have any old pictures of when you were working?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know where they are. They're someplace, but I've got them. I got a picture of our grading in the grain exchange on the 11th floor. We were on the 11th floor. Everybody lined up there, grading away in that grading bench. And I got Churchill. And where are those pictures? I guess I got them someplace, eh?
I have.
Oh, there we are. This is
the picture.
She's
the
picture.
The question that I was asking your husband was, one of the things that we're doing is, because we're doing the oral history, also if people have pictures,
mm-hmm.
whether we could make copies of them,
sure.
And have them go into the archives as part of the industry. So if you have any that we could copy, I wouldn't take them today, but we'd stay in touch and then copy them and put them in.
Yeah, we have some pictures, yeah.
would be great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. We need an archivist.
Yeah. I stood on the annex in the Churchill elevator. It was 2.5 million bushels at the time, and they wanted to expand it to 5. So they built another series of tanks on there, and I stood on there and went up like this here as they poured the cement.
Ooh.
Quite a sensation, and a massive thing. She went downstairs. It was a massive thing, and like
that would be an experience. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I had a lot of experiences. Yeah.
Is there anyone else you've mentioned, Mr. Woods?
Oh, Barry Woods, yeah, with Patterson.
Is there anyone else that we should interview that you can think of that's around and would have good memories?
Well, I don't know if you know doing anything with the wheat board.
We're doing everything with anything to do with the grain industry. Yes.
God, if you ever met Frank Rowan.
Nancy Perozzo has interviewed him.
He's a great guy, but what a character to talk with, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Frank and some of our, there's a lot of our people have passed away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know how far west you're going, the west coast or that.
Well, we're just trying to gather names and.
Yeah, Henry Fast would be good.
And who did he work for? Wheat board?
He was one of my assistants, and then he became chief.
Okay.
He followed me.
And does he live in Winnipeg, or is he on
the west coast? Yeah.
Well, you never know. People do travel.
Yeah, that's right. Henry, I would say Henry. Yeah, he worked for me, and he stayed enough long enough as chief to get kind of like the fellow that followed him only stayed a couple of years, and I wouldn't recommend him anyway. But Henry would be good, and Andy did. Charlie's dead. Matt's out there, but Matt, God, he's been retired for a long, long time. So Matt would be crowding. He's well in his 90s, I guess.
What's his last name?
Ainsley.
Matt Ainsley.
Yeah.
Okay, and he's on the West Coast, too.
Yeah. There's a young guy here. His name is... Just a minute. He's in Winnipeg here too, because he would be a newer chief and have brothers. See, we used to travel a lot, you know. Like, I was almost around the world, but then these other fellows went other places. But I don't know what they accomplished.
Where did you travel in your time?
Well, I went to Japan, and I went to Korea, and I went to Formosa. No, what's the proper name for that one? Good God, Bert.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Korea's here, and it's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's
when you went on these jobs.
Some of them were for the Canadian International Grains Institute, because that was the teaching part of the grain industry. You know. Yeah, where did I go? I went to Japan and Korea, and
Russia.
No, we got to stay in the East first. Korea, and where else did I go?
India.
I went to India.
I can just identify that the other female voice on the interview is Mrs. Duke.
Oh,
so there's a context.
No,
that's just so there's a context, because we're remembering where he traveled on behalf of the...
England.
Oh, yeah, I can do those ones, but I can't get this other one. Excuse me. I went to Taipei, Taiwan.
Okay.
Taiwan. And then I went to England a few times, several times. And then I went to Russia a couple of times. And I went to India. And I went to Morocco. And I went into France. That was funny. I got into France. I'll tell you a story. I got into France. I went into Paris. I got off the airplane, and this was on a tour to different places. And I got into Paris, and the guy met me, and we went to the consulate in Paris. And they sat me down, and then they all disappeared. And finally, the guy come back, and he says, "I have something to tell you." And I says, "Oh, yes. What can I do? What is that?" And he says, our secretary, she's not too good with English, she said. And when she got the message that you were coming, she thought they said trains and didn't get grains. So they thought I was an inspector of trains, and they couldn't understand why I was there in Paris. So they mocked up something about mustard seed, you know, had gone wrong with somebody, because we sold mustard into France, and they mocked up something about, you know, mustard seed, and I just, yeah, okay, yeah, right, thanks, bye. I went on to Morocco. But that was the funniest thing.
Yes, it is.
Another thing I did, I went to Morocco, and we had a problem with things like lentils, because that was one of our areas. So I had written a statement for the commission on something to do with the buying and selling of lentils and the guarantee on quality. And it took less than a minute to read it. So I went all the way to Morocco, got in with this crowd, and I was called up, and I spoke for a minute and sat down, and that was the end of that. And there were people all over the world were there, you know, particularly the Eastern countries, because they are strong in lentils, and the Arabic countries strong in lentils. And I did that, and I went, oh.
So most of your international travel was to be the face of the
Grain Commission. Yeah. I went to Italy. Yeah, I went to Italy too. Went to a few places, all right. Yeah.
Well, there's a whole part of your job that I didn't even know about, and we were at the end of the interview, and then you tell me you've gone all over the world.
Well, these other fellas did the same thing, you know, out of necessity. We went mainly to the Eastern countries, like Japan, China. We had staff going to China, too, but I didn't go. I was too high in position. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, into those places, training. We were going to lecturing on Canadian grain. And I guess we were there. It wasn't essential for us to be there, but we were there, at least I felt that way, to round out the programs, you know. Yeah. I mean, what the hell does it mean for us? For us to tell them about moving grain through the St. Lawrence when everything goes out the West Coast? You know, things like that. Oh, well, they learned it, and they had greater knowledge of Canada. Yeah, those were the days.
That's great. Well, I can't thank you enough for this interview.
Oh,
I've learned a
lot.
You. That's the nice part about getting to ask the questions.
I don't know if I answered everything well, but anyway.
No, you did. It was.
That's all I did after 25 years retired.
Very good. I really, really appreciate it. So I will turn the machine off.
Okay, now we can swear and everything.